This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Trump has had somewhat of a challenging relationship with the continent, Africa, but I think this meeting may be a chance to sort of reset the relationship.
That's VOA correspondent Bill Gallo reporting on Nigeria President Muhammad Buhari's visit to the White House. Details next.
Also, thousands of young migrants are camping along a canal in Paris, waiting for a chance to cross into Great Britain or France. And Somalia's parliament elects a new speaker as the country faces serious security and humanitarian challenges.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari wrapped up his meeting today with U.S. President Donald Trump at the White House. At a news conference just moments ago, President Trump said he was honored to host Buhari. He said the U.S. is working to expand trade and business ties with Africa, including Nigeria. He noted that Nigeria is the U.S. largest trade partner in Africa, but said he spoke with Buhari about easing trade barriers in Nigeria. Trump also said he especially wanted to thank Buhari for Nigeria's partnership in the fight against terrorism. Buhari said the two leaders discussed trade, security, and human rights. He emphasized the shared values of the two countries, such as the rule of law and freedom of expression. He also said his government congratulated the U.S. in its effort to defeat the Islamic State militants. VOA correspondent Bill Gallo is at the White House to cover the story. Earlier, he spoke with our colleague Kate Pound Dawson about the visit.
Yeah, well, the handshakes start right around noon, 1600 UTC here at the White House, so we may get some comments there at the top. Then they'll have a working lunch and a press conference. It's not clear if Buhari is actually going to do any other meetings in D.C. I've asked the Pentagon if he will have any meetings there. I haven't heard back yet. But there is some speculation that he may actually meet with Pentagon officials while he's here.
Now, Mr. Buhari is the first African leader to visit Mr. Trump at the White House. What does that indicate about the relationship between Nigeria and the U.S., and then also in general the U.S. relationship with African states?
Right. Well, Mr. Buhari was, as you know, one of the first African leaders that Trump actually talked to after he entered office. And I think it's, you know, it conveys the importance of the relationship. As you mentioned, this is the first sub-Saharan African leader to visit the White House. Trump has had somewhat of a challenging relationship with the continent as far as some of the remarks in January that he was reported to have made. He used a vulgarity to refer to African countries. That has caused, you know, a lot of anger and disappointment in Africa. But I think this meeting may be a chance to sort of reset the relationship, to focus on more positive things, assuming everything goes as planned, of course.
What are the two leaders expected to discuss today?
Well, the economy and counterterrorism cooperation are two of the main things here. You know, the economy, Nigeria is Africa's most populous country. It has a very quickly growing economy, especially last year. Lots of crude oil. China is actually the top investor in Nigeria currently, so that should, get Trump's attention there. There's also been some speculation that the U.S. is looking for an African country to select as a model free trade deal. And so Nigeria may push for that. On counterterrorism, Buhari is actually very happy that the Trump administration has eased some of the restrictions related to weapons sales. There was actually a $600 million deal in December that the Trump administration authorized, but I think Buhari is looking for more. He also wants expanded intelligence cooperation.
How is the visit being reviewed by rights groups, by activist groups, analysts who study Africa-U.S. relations?
Well, human rights groups are urging the Trump administration to push Buhari on human rights issues. Those groups have criticized Nigeria's military for rape, torture, extrajudicial killings. Now, Nigeria has said that those abuses are sporadic and not systematic, and therefore they should not be subject to U.S. laws preventing the United States from supporting militaries that are thought to be involved in human rights violations. Now, the Trump administration has actually been, generally speaking, more willing to overlook those alleged abuses in countries and, you know, look out for its interests. So it's possible that they will continue to do that with Nigeria as well.
That was VOA's Bill Gallo at the White House speaking with Kate Pound Dawson.
In France, thousands of young migrants are camping along a canal in Paris, waiting for a chance to cross into Great Britain or to apply for asylum in France. The camp has sprung up quickly over the past few months, in part because the French government has shut down or relocated other migrant camps and facilities. Journalist Catherine Field has visited the camp and met with migrants there. She spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson today about the situation.
The canal side in Paris, which is in the northeast of Paris, at the moment it's home to about 3,000 migrants. And the reason that the numbers have grown so much in the last couple of months is because essentially the Calais route to the United Kingdom has closed down. So they've all moved back to the northeast of Paris. And along that canal area and along the area which is all the underpasses of the main Paris Ring Road, they've been able to set up camps there. The majority of them are young men from Sudan, Eritrea, Libya, and Ethiopia. And they essentially are just there waiting for whatever chance they can get to the United Kingdom or even to put in an application for asylum here in France. The problem with France is that once you put in your application for asylum, you still don't get any government help. It can take up to 18 months for that process to chug through. And it's not until you have been accepted as an asylum seeker, as a refugee in France, that the government actually gives you help.
The photo that you showed me, the camp looks relatively orderly and tidy. Is that the reality, or is this an issue where it's going to become overcrowded and become a health and security issue?
It already is a health and security issue in many parts. You've got NGOs such as Médecins Sans Frontières, Médecins du Monde coming through twice a week and giving free health care. The Paris Town Hall is also once a week sending in a team to do health checks. They're checking in particular for tuberculosis and also for psychological problems. Let's not forget, a lot of these young men have come from war zones, areas where there have been human rights abuses. They've come by boat across the Mediterranean, made their way up to Paris on foot, by road, by jumping on and off trains. So some of them have psychological problems. So yes, the health issue is really of paramount importance. But these are also areas of Paris that are really overcrowded already. You've got houses, you've got apartment blocks where there are a lot of working class poor people living there. So these are areas already overcrowded, having problems with sanitation, having problems with getting litter collected off the street, having problems getting their own everyday garbage collected from rubbish bins. So these are areas where you have just all of these problems of sanitation and overcrowding coming together.
What is the city government and the national government, what are they doing?
What they have already done is they have set up about 750 places for migrants to go outside of Paris. And it's in five different centres that have set these up. And they set them up in the hope that these people would go there. Now, they haven't gone there because they don't feel safe there. Some have gone, but in general, most of the migrants who are there say, well, we don't want to be away from this community that's been set up there, and we're not really sure that what we'll get there is our papers to be checked. They're as concerned that this is actually just a quick to flick through and they'll be put on a plane back home. The state, of course, is also providing a huge amount of money to prop up where they can these migrants. They've given 150 million euros in the last year to help wherever is possible.
That was Catherine Field in Paris speaking with our colleague Kate Pound Dawson.
Nigerian queer women are telling their stories. A new book released this week is a collection of interviews with 24 women. It offers an unprecedented window into what it means to be a queer woman in Nigeria, where homosexuality is illegal. For VOA, Chika Adua reports from Abuja.
The book recounts a series of intimate interviews with 25 queer Nigerian women of various religious and socioeconomic backgrounds.
I'm really nervous, and I'm also nervous about the reception of Nigerians to the book.
That's one of the women featured in the book. She asked to be identified as Woman A. She said most queer Nigerian women are like her, living in the closet. In 2014, Nigeria banned same-sex marriage. The law is far-reaching. It also bans any cohabitation or public displays of affection, like kissing or hand-holding, between same-sex partners. Anyone who breaks the law could face up to 14 years in prison. There is also a 10-year prison sentence for anyone who registers, operates, or participates in gay clubs or organizations. Human Rights Watch said with the law, Nigeria effectively criminalized being LGBTQ, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer. That's what makes this book so groundbreaking. One woman reveals she lives with her partner in Abuja, which is illegal. She says, it's nice to wake up in the morning and have a cup of tea ready for her. Another woman speaks with anguish about the religious dilemma she faces being queer and Christian in Nigeria. Azina Mohammed, one of the book's editors, helped capture the one-on-one interviews. She said discussions of homosexuality in Africa focus on men. Queer women have been excluded.
There was an erasure of them, and we said they really need to be heard, and the reason why they haven't been heard is because the mic had not been passed to them. So we tried to do that with the book, to let them be heard in their own voice, with their own words.
The book has garnered buzz on social media. Many people say they're worried that homosexual lifestyles may become normalized in Nigerian society. Others say they have already pre-ordered the book in anticipation. The book was published and released in the UK, but the book's editors say it will soon be available in Nigeria. They are bracing for backlash. In the past, the Nigerian government has banned controversial art, including books. VOA spoke to Nigerian feminist activist Rosemary Ajuka.
Personally, I'm curious, and I'm definitely going to read this book, to hear that there's women talking about the fact that they're queer and what they want to do is get with other women. I think to even be talking about it, I'm excited that we're talking about this. I think this book is needed.
The book's release comes as authorities in Kenya banned the new film by celebrated Kenyan director Waniru Kahiu. The film, called Rafiki, is a coming-of-age story about two girls falling in love. It will premiere at the Cannes Film Festival in May, the first feature-length Kenyan film ever to do so. Asked what impact their book may have in Nigeria, Woman A is cautious. Chika Odua for VOA News in Abuja.
Coming up on 19 minutes past the hour, this is African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Two South African women received the 2018 Goldman Environmental Prize at a ceremony in Washington, D.C. last week. Makoma Lekalakala, director of the volunteer organization Earth Life Africa, and Liz McDade, an environmental activist, were recognized for challenging a $76 billion nuclear deal between Russia and South Africa that they say would have harmed South Africa's environment by producing toxic waste. In 2014, Lekalakala said South Africa's then-president Jacob Zuma partnered with Russia to develop 10 nuclear power stations throughout South Africa. However, the environmentalists obtained a copy of the agreement and realized the deal's devastating economic and environmental implications. In tackling an issue of this magnitude, Lekalakala teamed up with McDade. Though located on different sides of the country and working on small budgets, the women joined forces to mobilize their respective networks to fight the nuclear deal. They developed a strategy to challenge it on the grounds that it had been kept secret and bypassed the legal process without public consultation or parliamentary debate. Lakalakala said these efforts required the assistance of many people who worked tirelessly, and in receiving the award, she said many others should be recognized as well.
It's a great honor for us. This recognition, it's not just a recognition of an individual. It's a recognition of many other people that are contributing towards saving the planet. But also, I think for both of us, it's also an honor that our names are now mentioned along the names of people who really have inspired us, people that have worked with us, people who actually have made a difference in protecting the planet and also inciting more generations also to take action, because we don't have any other planet. This is the only one we have.
Liz McDade agrees that exposing the corrupt deal involved the collaboration of many people. She hopes that their work will inspire other activists to take on these types of major challenges.
The spotlight has maybe come on this kind of, firstly, that these deals exist, and secondly, that the use of the law, the legal process to overturn them, which was a last resort, can be successful. So it means that there are successes that can be applied to other environmental issues, and we hope that this inspires others that may be facing particular challenges to be able to take their own challenges forward.
Once Lakalakala and McDade exposed the details of the Russian nuclear deal, they began to raise public awareness about the environmental impacts on the proposed site for the first nuclear station. They met with communities around the country and organized weekly anti-nuclear vigils in front of the Cape Town Parliament. McDade said, as an activist, you cannot be afraid to speak up.
Well, it's just that you cannot sit by idly and let few greedy elites loot the country. As people who are activists and who want justice and public accountability in South Africa, it's very important to stand up against such bullies.
Lakalakala and McDade persisted in pressuring the South African government while their legal challenge to the Russian nuclear deal made its way through the courts. As a result of their campaign, citizens across South Africa raised their concerns about the potential environmental impact and the financial burden of the $76 billion deal. On April 26, 2017, the Western Cape High Court ruled that the nuclear deal was both unlawful and unconstitutional, invalidating the agreement between the South African government and Russia and stopping the multi-billion-dollar nuclear power project. Lakalakala says it is important for everyone to take responsibility in keeping the planet safe, even if it means taking legal action.
As a person, if you see that there's an injustice taking place, you have to stand up, you have to raise a voice and challenge what is happening so that life can continue on Earth.
The Goldman Environmental Prize is the world's most prestigious award for grassroots environmentalists. The high coveted prize is awarded annually to six people from six different continents who undertake sustained and significant efforts to protect and enhance the natural environment, often at great personal risk.
Somalia's parliament elected a new speaker today to lead the contentious House, as the country faces serious security and humanitarian challenges. 10 candidates competed for the post, which became vacant April 12th when Mohamed Osman Jawari resigned after a bitter dispute with the legislative branch. After two rounds of voting, lawmakers elected Mohamed Morsal Abdurrahman, who resigned as defense minister last week, to run for speaker. Abdurrahman, 61, is a former ambassador to Turkey who is believed to have close working relations with Somalia's Prime Minister Hassan Ali Khayr. Meanwhile, leaders of the African countries contributing peacekeepers to Somalia recently announced plans to halt reducing troop numbers because Somali security forces are not ready to take over security responsibilities. And also, hundreds of thousands of people have fled their homes due to flooding in south-central regions of Somalia in recent days that have killed at least five people. Water levels continue to rise, and aid organizations have warned of possible outbreaks of diseases such as malaria and cholera.
Rated among the top festivals in Africa, the Harare International Festival of the Arts is ready to set off fireworks for the opening night of the six-day festival in Zimbabwe's capital. Reporter Kutsai Zvinavashi reports.
Harare International Festival of the Arts, also known as HIFA, is set to open its doors tomorrow for a variety of shows and different forms of art. The show is happening against the backdrop of Zimbabwe's biting economy, characterized by an acute cash crisis. Tafadzwa Simba is HIFA Associate Executive Director.
The thing is this, there's been a discussion with regard to where we are as a country and arts funding and so forth, and why HIFA continues to go up when things are difficult. But you see, it's when things are difficult that you really see the true colors of someone and the true purpose and intent of someone, somebody being a natural person or a whole person.
Simba says, as a non-profit organization, they are not doing it for the money, but for the development of the arts. This year's 18th edition of Zimbabwe's largest festival is running under the theme, We Count. HIFA Executive Director Maria Wilson explains the festival theme.
Something phenomenal is about to happen in our city. And this phenomenon is extraordinary for all of us because we made it happen because we count. This is not just mere words. You count, we count. We are a country of people that can make a difference.
Despite the economic challenges, the festival is necessitated by various partnerships between the festival and corporate companies, non-profits, and the diplomatic community. HIFA remains one of the biggest employers in the country's art sector. This year, 217 artists are expected to take part in the festival. Manuel Bagoro is the festival artistic director. He says New York-based singer and songwriter Judah Gavra will be part of the opening show, which is built to set the tone for the festival.
We're rehearsing the opening show, We Count, which happens tomorrow night. Judah is performing in that show, along with over 100 other performers. It's a massive undertaking, incredibly exciting, an incredible statement of intent for the artistic community of Zimbabwe, as well as our international collaborators, to say this is important, this is fun, it has levity, it has humor, but it is also crucially important.
Some of the international musicians that are set to take part in the festival are South Africa's jazz songbird, Lira, South African pop band called Beatenberg, Cheka from Cape Verde, and many others. The presence of so many artists from different backgrounds leaves an opportunity for collaborations between artists. HIFA encourages and has in the past facilitated collaborations between local and international visiting artists. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari meets with President Donald Trump at the White House on Monday, April 30th. We'll discuss their meeting and current U.S.-Africa relations on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.